Today, the bear market is not over yet. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics World Daily Post, covering finance and prop news with a distinctively Australian flavour. One characteristic of a bear market are relief rallies, which start strong, but which also eventually run out of steam. And we've seen this during the week, as a gauge of global stocks fell on Friday to end the trading week on a down note after five straight sessions of gains. In addition, the dollar dipped against a basket of major currencies after soft data on US business activity was released. In fact, Friday was a bit wobbly on Wall Street, which posted modest losses in early trading, but declines on the S&P 500 accelerated as big tech names like Meta and Alphabet lost ground in the wake of earnings from Snap, which plunged 39.08%. Defensive sectors such as utilities and consumer staples were among the few advances. Every rally we have had during this bear market, there have been a number of sharp rallies, and then they fade, and we set new lows, and that has been a pretty consistent pattern here, said Tim Gridsky, senior portfolio strategist at Ingalls & Snyder in New York. Everybody is looking for the turn, everybody is trying to guess at when we get a sustained rally, and everyone is hoping for one, but to me, there is still a lot of unknown ahead of us. With 106 of the S&P 500 companies having reported earnings through to Friday morning, 75.5% topped analyst expectations. That's below the 81% over the past four quarters. And despite Friday's churn, the equity market does remain on course for its best week in a month, paring this year's market rout to about 17%. It's still very early days, but we've seen numerous cases now of earnings surprises driven by the "it's not as bad as we feared" argument, said Craig Erlem, a senior market analyst at Honor. Now that's a relief, of course, but surely not a case for a sustainable rebound. Expectations heading into the reporting cycle were ultra low and well priced in most sectors. Art Hogan, chief market strategist at B. Riley Wealth, wrote, "Another potential positive is that market participants may have reached a peak in pessimism at the same time that inflation has likely peaked. With pessimism at a peak and inflation receding, the market may be at the ever-elusive capitulation point and see more constructive action in the second half." The message of the week is clear. Bulls clearly took control of markets, said Florian Lepo, head of macro research at Lombard Odier Asset Management. For now, sentiment is in the driving seat, and the previously excessive pessimism is now resulting in a relief rally. Investors cannot really complain about that. Speculation that the worst of the sell-off has passed is partially behind the move, but angst about the damage from inflation, rapidly rising interest rates and recession fears is proving hard to shake, despite a tempering in expectations of Fed aggressiveness this coming Thursday. The Fed meeting will be crucial, said Quincy Crosby, chief global strategist at LPL Financial. Does the Fed rhetoric become less hawkish? Because what the markets may be expecting is that the Fed goes into the summer months and comes out perhaps a little less hawkish, but it's a question mark because it depends on the trajectory of inflation. In fact, the latest Atlanta Fed GDP Now estimate was down. The model estimate for real GDP growth, season adjusted, in the second quarter of 2022 is now minus 1.6%. That's on July the 19th. And that was down from 1.5% on July the 15th. After Friday's home starts report from the U.S. Census Bureau, the now cast of second quarter real residential investment growth decreased from 8.8% to down 10.1%. Underscoring recession fears, Treasury extends an advance, pushing the 10-year yield to around 2.7%. And the 2-year yield was still higher, so the inversion is still in play, as rate cuts are also increasingly being priced in for 2023 and even perhaps that recession. US business activity contracted in July for the first time in more than 2 years, according to the S&P Global Flash Composite Purchasing Managers Output Index. Its preliminary US composite PMI had tumbled far more than expected to 47.5% this month from a final reading of 53.2% in June. This data has showed signs of a slowing economy, but the Federal Reserve is still widely expected to raise US interest rates by 75 basis points at its policy meeting to combat inflation. Swap traders indeed have paired bets on Fed hikes, shifting towards pricing in a 50 basis point hike in September as more likely than a 3/4 point move, and swaps targeting next week's meeting briefly indicated a 75 basis point increase was slightly less than certain. The market is quickly pricing out the possibility of the Fed being able to raise rates aggressively for the remainder of the year, said Sumbrana Rajaya, head of US Rate Strategy at Societe Generale in New York. The Dow Jones Industrial Average fell 0.43% to 31,899. The S&P 500 lost 0.93% to 3,961. And the Nasdaq Composite dropped 1.87% to 11,834. For the week, the Dow was up 1.96%, the S&P 500 up 2.56%, and the Nasdaq rose 3.3%. The gains for the Dow and the S&P marked their biggest weekly percentage gains in four. But Snap shares tumbled 39% after it said inflation and competition had hurt advertising demand, and it declined to forecast results. It was its slowest ever sales growth as a publicly traded company. Snap, the owner of the disappearing message app Snapchat, said it's going to cut back on hiring, as have other large media companies. Snap's results have become a barometer for ad spending amid mounting economic concerns. There are growing signs that tech companies are indeed preparing for a recession, with some pulling back on hiring, while Meta has lost about half of its value this year after disappointing revenue forecasts. Meta and Alphabet are scheduled to report earnings next week. Twitter missed expectations for profit, revenue and user growth, and blamed its performance in part on its battle with Elon Musk for chasing away advertisers. The company is suing Musk in Delaware to force him to make good on his $44 billion takeover, which he wants to scrap. Twitter shares rose 0.8%. Revenue of $1.18 billion fell short of the $1.33 billion forecast. Other social media stocks were falling, including Meta Platforms down 7%. The market has experienced a sell-off due to multiple compression, not due to lower earnings, Alicia Levine, head of equities at BNY Mellon Wealth Management, said. The recent earnings in social media are a reminder that there is earnings risk in these pummeled sectors, which still may not be priced into the market. Further, there are macro risks to earnings in general after weak US and European PMIs this morning. In other earnings news, American Express rallied after reporting record revenue and raising full-year forecasts. Verizon Communications slumped, though, after it missed profit estimates and cut guidance. And HCA Healthcare soared after earnings beat. The dollar lost ground on the heels of the business activity data as investors weighed slowing economic activity against easing inflation. The dollar index, which pits the greenback against six major currencies, hit a more than two-week low of 105.93 on Friday, after soaring to 109.14 last week for its highest level since December 2002. After touching that 20-year high last week, the dollar was on track for its biggest weekly percentage decline in nearly 2 months and ended at 106.54. The slide in the greenback has worsened since the European Central Bank on Thursday joined many other central banks in rising interest rates, focusing on fighting runaway inflation rather than economic downturns. The euro was down 0.15% to 1.021. The euro slipped in choppy trading, in fact, after data showed eurozone business activity also unexpectedly contracted this month, with companies continuing to report rising costs as inflation bites, hitting consumer demand and weighing on the outlook. The Japanese yen did strengthen 0.98% versus the greenback at 136.10 per dollar, while sterling last traded at 1.2004, up 0.09% on the day. Oil bulls faced their third weekly losses in US crude as the massive gasoline inventory pileup of the past fortnight continued to weigh, despite a weaker dollar helping some short covering to the selling from earlier in the week. US crude settled down 1.31% to $95.09 per barrel. And for the week, WTI fell almost 3%, extending it to 13% the loss over the past three accumulated weeks. And last week, in fact, WTI sank to $90.58 for its worst price since February. US gasoline stockpiles ballooned by about 9 billion barrels over the past 2 weeks in the largest build-up since the near 14 million barrel jump seen during January the 7th and January the 15th. Brent settled at $103.71. That was down 0.64% on the day, but for the week Brent finished up 2.2%, ending a five-day losing streak that had it set to drop by about 17%. The global crude benchmark hit a near five-month low of $95.42 last week. It's the weaker dollar that's the story here, and that's helped oil cut some losses, said John Cudliffe, partner at New York energy hedge fund Again Capital. But WTI is still the weaker link here compared to Brent, and that's because of the huge gasoline buildup we've had over the past 2 weeks. Volatility has been the name of the game in oil since last week's rate hike fears that propped up the dollar to two-decade highs. European stock markets edged higher on Friday, ending the week on a positive note despite the ECB's larger-than-expected interest rate hike, as well as disappointing survey growth data. Of course, on Thursday, the ECB raised rates by 50 basis points after weeks of indicating a 25 basis point hike was in the offing. ECB President Christine Lagarde said in an interview on Friday that the central bank will raise its interest rates until inflation falls back to its 2% target. That's the strongest comments to date about combating inflation. And meanwhile, German short-term bonds soared as investors trimmed bets on European central bank rate hikes after weaker than expected PMI data in the region fanned fears of recession. And you can see more in my recent post about the ECB hike. The latest PMI survey data for the Eurozone suggested that growth is slowing in the region, even before the central bank had started to tighten monetary policy. The key German manufacturing PMI release fell to 49.2 in July, dropping in contractory territory at its lowest level in 25 months, reinforcing predictions that Europe's biggest economy is heading into a recession in the second half of 2022. The pan-European Stoxx 600, though, closed up 0.31%, and the MSCI's gauge of stocks across the globe shed 0.44% after climbing to 623.79. That's the highest level since June the 10th. The MSCI index climbed 3.1% for the week, and the Stoxx 600 notched a biggest weekly percentage gain in 2 months, in part due to easing concerns about a potential energy crisis. The DAX in Germany traded 0.5% higher at 13,253. The CAC 40 in France rose 0.25% to 6,216. And UK's FTSE gained 0.8% to 7,276 as the replacement Prime Minister campaign got down to the last two. The results will be known in September. And there was some relatively good news on Friday as UK retail sales fell by 0.1% a month in June. That's a less steep decline than had been expected as the Queen's Platinum Jubilee boosted food and drink sales. That said, this still represented an annual drop of 5.8% as UK consumers reined in their discretionary spending in the face of the cost of living crisis. Europe took centre stage last week, of course, as leaders waited nervously to see if gas would start flowing again through Nord Stream 1 following the scheduled maintenance. Russian gas did start flowing along the pipeline as planned on Thursday, albeit at 40%, which is where it was before the maintenance began. While there are relief, it's clear the energy strategy situation in Europe is going to remain extremely challenging in the months ahead, given the tendency for flows to be reduced. In corporate news, Santander stocks rose 1.5% after the Spanish lender dropped out of the process to buy Citigroup's Mexican retail bank after having previously submitted a non-binding offer earlier this year. And sticking with the banking sector, Danske Bank stock fell 3.7% after the Danish lender said it won't make a 2021 dividend payment targeted for this quarter, saying that negotiations with US and Danish authorities to end a money laundering scandal are still underway. And Schindler stock fell 3.5% after the Swiss elevator and escalator manufacturer cut its revenue guidance for the full year, citing China market contraction and COVID-related lockdowns. Russia and Ukraine signed a landmark deal on Friday to unblock grain exports from Black Sea ports and eased an international food crisis while the United States pledged more military support 5 months into the invasion. The White House actually announced fresh support of around $270 million to Kyiv, including $100 million for drones, and is also doing preliminary work on whether to send fighter aircraft, although it said that it would not happen in the near term. Fighting rages on in Ukraine's east, and in a sign of how far away peace remains, Russia and Ukraine representative declined to sit at the same table and avoided shaking hands at the grain agreement ceremony in Istanbul on Friday. Friday's deal means that around $10 billion worth of grain will be available for sale, with roughly 20 million tons of last year's harvest that can now be exported. Friday's export deal hopes to avert famine among tens of millions of people in poorer nations by injecting more wheat, sunflower oil, fertilizer, and other products into world markets, including for humanitarian needs, partially at lower prices. A blockade of Ukrainian ports by Russia's Black Sea Fleet, trapping tens of millions of tons of grain and stranding many ships, has worsened global supply chain bottlenecks and, along with Western sanctions, stoked food and energy price inflation. Moscow has denied responsibility for the crisis, blaming instead sanctions for slowing its own food and fertilizer exports and Ukraine for mining the approaches to its Black Sea ports. A US official said a separate pact signed on Friday would smooth such Russian exports and that United Nations welcomed US and European Union clarifications that their sanctions would not apply to that shipment. Addressing Western concerns that reopening shipping lanes could leave Ukraine open to attack, the Russian defense minister said Moscow would not seek to take advantage of the demining of Ukraine's ports. Russia has taken on the obligations that are clearly spelled out in this document. We will not take advantage of the fact that the ports will be cleared and opened, he said. Ukraine's infrastructure minister also said that Kyiv does not see a risk of Russian ships attacking through the port, as they would be vulnerable to Ukrainian missile strikes. Senior UN officials briefing reports on Friday said the deal was expected to be fully operational in a few weeks and would restore grain shipments from the three reopened ports to pre-war levels of 5 million tons a month. Safe passage into and out of the ports would be guaranteed in what one official called a de facto ceasefire for the ships and facilities covered, they said, although the word ceasefire was actually not in the agreement text. Though Ukraine has mined nearby offshore areas as part of its defences, Ukrainian pilots would guide ships along safe channels in its territorial waters, they said. Monitored by a joint coordination centre based in Istanbul, the ships would then transit the Black Sea to Turkey's Bosphorus Strait and proceed to world markets. Today, there is a beacon on the Black Sea, a beacon of hope, possibility, and relief in a world that needs it more than ever, said the Secretary General of the UN. And it's worth noting that US wheat futures are down to 755.30, having reached a peak quite recently of more than 1,269. So the recent announcement will make some difference to food prices, hopefully, down the track. Gold bulls actually clinched their first weekly win this week since early June, as the yellow metal's losing streak came to an end after 5 weeks in the red. Gold futures rose 0.68% to 1,725. With an ounce remaining in the low 1,700 range, analysts said gold could still be vulnerable to another dip to 1,600 territory next week as markets brace for the Federal Reserve's July rate hike. But if the bullion holds to the pattern of the past 2 days, it could also bounce forcibly any descent into the sub-1,700s and could actually end up towards 1,800. But they've been saying that for a hell of a long time, actually. Gold is starting to act like a safe haven as weakening economic growth will force many central banks to abandon their aggressive tightening plans, said Ed Moyer, who heads US research at online trading platform Onya. Gold might find resistance at the 1,750 level, but if it doesn't, not much will get in the way until it gets to 1,800, he said. The weekly gain came as the dollar index, which is a contrarian trade to gold, hit a more than two-week low. In Asia, China sentiment is being driven by political developments at home, notably the ongoing mortgage payment strikes by apartment buyers, and this is putting more financial pressure on developers. More stress in this sector will weigh heavily on the Shanghai Composite, where there are lots of banks, and the Hang Seng, there are lots of developers. The Shanghai Index closed down 0.06% to 3,270, and the Hang Seng rose 0.17% to 20,609. COVID-19 cases are rising in China once again, and the ever-present risk is that centres like Shanghai or Beijing could face partial shutdowns once again, potentially a major negative for local and regional equity markets. And you can see my recent show about China and their, in effect, bank deposit bail-in. Next week, we're going to get industrial profits on Wednesday, though world markets will, of course, remain laser-focused on what happens in the US. Australian shares rallied to their best week since March 2022 as stocks beaten down in the rising interest rate environment rebounded, leading to questions about whether the market has hit the bottom. The S&P ASX 200 paired early losses on Friday after spending the morning in negative territory to finish the day down just 0.04% to 6,792, trimming the weekly gain to 2.8%. The information technology sector climbed 7.1% over the past 5 days and 0.15% on Friday, bolstered by a rally in US tech stocks on Thursday. Embattled buy now, pay later Zipco surged 54.4% over the week and 13.5% on Friday to close at 88 cents after exiting its overseas markets and scrapping products as it desperately tries to get itself into the black before it runs out of cash. This comes a week after abandoning its merger with Sezzle in another attempt to fast-track profitability. Bank stocks benefited from a continued rebound in the US banking sector, and after Westpac increased its fixed and variable rates, CBA added 3.7% to 97.80 over the week, NAB added 4.1% to 29.90, while Westpac gained 4.8% to 21.10, and ANZ closed on Friday up 3% to 22.60 as it sought to finalise its plans to buy Suncorp Bank. Magellan Financial Services climbed more than 20% over the week to $14.10 after reporting early signs of improved performance in its flagship global fund, which was up 2.7% versus the benchmark over the 3 months. The ASX joined other share markets around the world in 5 days of gains, but the weekly rally has not changed the view of Diana Mosea, senior economist at AMP Investments, who said the risk is of more downside to equities until there are clearer signs that inflation has peaked and until economic data troughs. On a 6-12 months view, we are more optimistic on shares as inflation recedes, central banks stop raising interest rates and even start cutting them, and a deep recession is avoided, she said. And trading on Friday was helped by the energy sector, which traded initially down 1.6% lower, but paired losses to 1.2%. Financials, the largest sector by value, climbed 0.5%, second only to real estate, which edged 0.9% higher. Communication services was the day's laggard, down 1.3%. PointsBet Holdings added 16.25%, while EML Payments rose 7.2%. Paladin Energy declined 6.6%, and Webjet gave back 6.3% to $5.03. And BHP was down slightly to 36.70, while Rio was up slightly to 96.26. Iron ore fines in Singapore were down to 104.46, putting some pressure on the miners. A National Australia Bank upgraded its forecast for the Reserve Bank's cash rate to 2.85% by the end of this year from 2.35%. NAB now predicts increases of 0.5 percentage point at the next two meetings in August and September. However, we acknowledge a 75 basis point hike in August is possible if next week's June quarter inflation data beats expectations. Chief Economist Alan Oster said this would take the rate to at least neutral, if not mildly restrictive territory, and the present 1.35% cash rate was simply too low. The recent drop in the unemployment rate to 3.5% is too large to ignore, particularly given the expectations that next week's second quarter CPI release will show further very elevated inflation, he said. We now expect the RBA to lift rates to 2.85% by the end of the year, which we consider to be around neutral, if not mildly restrictive, and then to pause. Previously, we'd expected a cash rate of 2.35% by the end of 2022, with rates peaking at 2.6% in early 2023. Next week, the focus switches back to the US, which has a big interest rate decision of its own and a number of major earnings reports. The Fed is expected to raise interest rates by 75 basis points, although it may be tempted to follow the Bank of Canada in hiking by a full percentage point and show the world that it means business, or it may be 50 basis points, who knows. This is happening against the backdrop of mounting recession fears, which makes next week's earnings report all the more important. Elsewhere, it's a little quieter on the central bank front, which is hardly surprising considering how many we've heard from over the last couple of weeks. There's always the possibility of an inter-meeting decision if a central bank deems it necessary, and many have taken that option over the past couple of years, but then there's no shortage of economic data which traders will no doubt scrutinise for inflation cues. On Wednesday, the Fed will have to decide how high they want to raise interest rates. This time, the consensus estimate is for that 75 basis point increase, but some are expecting the Fed to slow the pace of tightening to a half point increase, while a couple of economists think an aggressive full point increase is justified and on the table. On Thursday, we're going to find out if the US fell into a technical recession. The first look at the second quarter GDP is expected to show a modest expansion of 0.9%, an improvement from the minus 1.6% read from the prior quarter. Most economists are expecting somewhere between minus 0.6 and plus 1.2%, so they're all over the scoreboard, really. This is also a massive week for earnings. On Tuesday, we're going to get updates from General Motors, General Electric, United Parcels, and 3M, and Apple and Amazon both report after the close on Thursday. A lot of traders still believe any stock market rebounds are bear market rallies, as the Fed will remain committed to fighting inflation for the rest of the year. If Court America starts to show more troubles with the jobs market, that could make some investors reassess how aggressive the Fed is going to be looking forward. The Australian dollar remains at the mercy of international investor sentiment flows, which have been positive for the last week. It could drop suddenly if investor sentiment swings south, but it rose to 69.24 on the back of a weaker US dollar in recent days. Australia releases inflation data next Wednesday, which should generate short-term volatility, and a high print could also have markets scrambling to price in more aggressive RBA tightening, which may be positive for the Aussie dollar and negative for local equities. And New Zealand releases business and consumer sentiment data next week. There is substantial downside risk as cost of living and weakening property prices bite, a potential negative for local equities. And the New Zealand dollar remains at the mercy of international investor sentiment flows. And finally, Bitcoin was on the rise again on Friday, only temporarily deterred by the news from Tesla dumping three quarters of its holdings in the last quarter. For so long, Musk was seen as an ally of the crypto community, but it's in recently fallen victim to his unpredictability. He may be an ally again in the future, but perhaps not the reliable one he was once viewed as. In the near term, the recovery is gathering a bit of support at around 23,500, which of course is the next barrier, but the latest price was 22,721, while Ethereum stood at 1,543, down 2.84%. So standing back, if you think the bear market territory is over, you're kidding yourself. There's so much uncertainty ahead, and I think we're going to see over the next couple of weeks yet more of it coming through. So while markets have had a little bit of an upside this week, maybe we should be cautious and remain cautious probably until early next year, with the significant risk, to my mind, still lying in September and October. But we'll see. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.